Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Andy Mahood. Andy is a Salesforce certified technical architect and the CTO of Procursive, a Salesforce product company in London. Through the episode, we look back at Andy's earlier career, how he found his way into the ecosystem, and the roles that he has played since. We look at working for an end user, and then stepping into consulting, and then ultimately building his own Salesforce product business. In terms of the consulting world, Andy worked for Tequila UK, which sounds like an absolutely incredible place to work. So it was really interesting to find out a bit more about what the environment was like working in and around some amazing talent. We then look at his journey to CTA, what that looked like, how it shaped up, and the gaps that he needed to fill along the way. We look at what changed when he became a CTA, and then find out a little bit more about getting a product business off the ground and how he approached that alongside working for Tequila at the time. We then look at the challenges that he's faced building and scaling the product business, the kind of people he looks to hire in the team, and how his role has changed over the years from being the founder and builder of the product to now being the CTO and managing a team of technical resources. Really, really interesting to hear more about Andy's story. There's lots of really interesting tips and pieces of advice in here for anyone that's interested in going down the CTA path or even looking to build a product business. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So Andy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. And I was just saying before, you're now a podcast pro yourself. So I'm under the spotlight here to make sure I deliver this like a pro. Well, we've got a lot to get through today, so I'm really keen to talk about your business, your journey through Salesforce and the journey to CTA and being a product owner and business owner. So I'd like to start before all of that, though, and look at the kind of early days and kind of what your career aspirations were growing up and what your earlier career looked like.
Yeah, I guess even when I was at school, I thought I wanted to work in technology, so I was very keen and interested in how software worked. I remember kind of flipping through computer manuals as a kid and like playing with my parents, like the PC we had at home. And I did, I liked software. I did a computer science degree at university, but I remember a teacher at school actually gave me lunchtime detention for about 2 months or something. I forget exactly what I did, but I'm sure I didn't deserve it. I got lunchtime detention for a couple of months. And rather than the usual thing that they did, which was sort of making people do litter picking, whatever it was, in the playground for some kind of humiliation, she made me focus on my coursework. And as a result, this was by far my like highest grading class at school. And then I followed that through into college and then into university.
So it was pretty handy that you'd done something wrong then, so you got to knuckle down and focus on the world of IT.
Well, that's the life lesson that I focused on.
yeah, absolutely. So then coming out of your computer science degree, what did the early kind of real-life world career look like?
Well, out of university, I got a job working at Dell as a developer. So this was actually in the sales org, which is quite unusual. So I wasn't actually hired into IT or into an R&D or a development team. I was hired into the sales organization. And they hired me as part of a team to like automate document creation around proposals and work on some other systems like that. So it's the sort of thing that could be done today by Conga and Salesforce in a couple of days, but we had a little team working on it, sort of me and a couple of other people. Then at some point around 2007 or so, Dell started rolling out Salesforce globally. So I was asked to work with the teams to integrate and pull customer data in and out of Salesforce into these different apps. And once I started reading the documentations and playing with developer accounts on Salesforce, I kind of realized that the system should just be built on Salesforce and convince the others. And then we worked with the Salesforce team on a POC around that. So I was quite captured quite quickly how quickly you could like turn an idea into something on Salesforce.
So looking at that early document generation, was that like you were building a product or you were just every document was kind of coded or built as it came in, or were you building out a product that would automate a lot of that?
It was an internal product for the sales organization to be able to create proposals. So it's like a proposal generation software. So there was like a form that say, who's the customer? What are the product? Tick the products, tick the industry, and it would kind of recommend different articles to pull into the proposal, like case studies and things like that, and kind of merge together different pieces of content from a content library. So it was working. There was some back-end like CM, like document management system behind it. I forget what it was actually called, but we were just building this kind of front-end to help them build the proposals.
Yeah, nice. And then, so you kind of fell into Salesforce when Dell implemented Salesforce and kind of you guided them through that. But was it love at first sight?
I guess I wouldn't say love, but I was quite calculated. I was building sort of different apps in things like .NET and like VB.NET and things like that at the time, because we were trying to automate document creation. And what I saw straight away was it removed all this boilerplate from an app, like authentication and security and reporting and like email notifications and like things like that that could just be done with workflow. So I kind of recognized like how much of the application that we had built, you could take 20% of it and put it on Salesforce and you get all the value. So there was so much just stuff around the apps that we were building just to make them run and report and do the stuff that you just get for free on Salesforce.
Sure. So I'm really keen shortly to hear about some of the consulting work that you've done and especially Tequila. But if we look back at Dell, what from the moment you kind of found Salesforce, what were the next kind of roles that you played in that space?
So it was my manager who was really quite influential. So she was this amazing woman who had spent years at Sun Microsystems through their heyday and was working on these projects with me at Dell. And she just said one day that I should just explore Salesforce as a technology, as I kind of got it. And she thought that Salesforce was going to be huge, which she was kind of right about. So quickly after that conversation, I was actually kind of making recommendations to make myself redundant at Dell by saying, you should just do this in Salesforce and hand that over to another team, which I was fairly naive about at the time. But after these conversations, I applied for a job as a Salesforce admin at a company called IG, which is a fintech company in London. And I managed to grow very quickly from there. So something that's worth pointing out is that every career progression that I've made started with a salary drop. So from Dell to IG, my salary dropped. From IG to Tequila, my salary dropped. From Tequila to starting my own business at Taskfeed, my salary dropped actually quite substantially then. And so each was a step down in the base salary, but each followed quite quickly through like fast promotions and salary increases, often more than two times what I was starting on. So for people looking to develop their career, I always urge people to focus on the role in the company, because in my experience anyway, the salary will kind of figure itself after that.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because often as a recruiter, you know, my role calling people and talking to them about a role, often the first question we get is, what are they paying? And it's crazy. Even moving for the same money, a lot of people see as a negative or kind of a step backwards, because they don't think that they get the pay rise as quickly as perhaps they want, and they don't look at the opportunity. But so you went from being kind of in a developer role to an admin role when you went to IG. So did you see that as a step back, or did you at that time, was there just, you know, the admin role would also include coding and you just saw it as an opportunity to learn a new environment?
I saw it as an opportunity to learn. So at that point, I kind of realized that development was one part of knowing about Salesforce. And I wanted to have a role that would give me a lot of exposure to the whole product or the whole platform. And I kind of, I guess I wanted to start and just really get an understanding for how things work. Because I'd kind of come in at Dell, I'd kind of had experience, but I was on the outside. I was sort of making recommendations. I was digging around documentation, putting things together, but I was never actually rolling things out to users or creating final product. So that's something that I did at IG as a Salesforce admin. But that's kind of the role I went into. Very quickly, that turned into kind of me running a team and hiring admins. And there was already a couple of really great developers there, but like sort of developing that out into a team. As we did more and more with Salesforce. But I guess I deliberately went into a role where I could make sure I was learning like everything, which would kind of help me accelerate a bit more.
So my next question was going to be, why did you then go into consulting? But I guess you've just answered that, because then you've kind of amplified the learning curve and going into that environment where you're kind of constantly being put into new environments.
Yeah, that was it. The reason I went to Tequila at IG, I'd grown a team for, I forget how many we had at the time, like 5 or 6 developers. So it wasn't a huge team, but it was, you know, a team that you needed to manage people. And I'd been speaking to this guy at the Telegraph who I just heard through, who I was introduced to, I don't even know how, called Wes Nolte. And he was running a development team as well. So I'd quite often just shoot emails to him about how they did things on Salesforce, like how they managed development and releases and things like that. And then suddenly I just stopped answering my emails. And I was like, oh, well, I didn't really notice it. It just went away. And then he actually reached out to me like a couple of months later, telling me they had moved and started working in this consultancy called Tequila and to see if I was interested in joining. And at that point, I really was. Like, I'd done everything we could really do at IG. We'd done communities, we'd done Service Cloud, we'd done Sales Cloud, we'd done custom app platform stuff. And we were very much in support mode at that point. So I was quite keen. Actually, I always thought consultants were other people. That wasn't me. Like, they were like, you know, people in suits that came in and did some PowerPoint. So I wasn't really that aware of what technology consulting was or what it entailed. I had a chat with them, and what they were doing sounded really fun. It sounded like you get to do something new all the time, which was great. It's what I wanted to do at the time.
So tell me about Tequila, because from the outside looking in, like I've been in the ecosystem for 6 years, but whenever I see a profile from Tequila UK, they always tend to be top quality. Like, there's a team that we're here in Australia, Cloud Sherpas, and I always say they had such an amazing team. Like, to create that team again would be really, really probably impossible. But then when I think about Tequila, like, it's another level, the people that you've had through there or the people that you would have worked with. What was it like day to day just working with these Salesforce, well, you're one of them, but the Salesforce geniuses that they were able to hire and grow?
Yeah, it was really exciting. So it felt like we were also growing very quickly. It was like a new company every 9 months. So it didn't really have, there was not one experience. We often, like, if we're talking about it with some of the people I used to work with there, we kind of, the different offices we'd have were kind of inflection points in the business, I think, in terms of, like, you know, were you there when we're at this office? Because it was kind of a different feeling as a company at that point. Sure. So I started when Tequila was in the UK, anyway, it was about 25 people. Actually, it was just the UK at that point, 20, 25 people when I joined. When I left, I don't know what it was, 100 odd people in the UK, I guess, and then a few in different locations overseas. But yeah, like, we got to work with some really great people, some of them that I've been bringing onto my podcasts, people like Wes Nolte that I recommended, Cameron Cronin, who's at Accenture. Wes is now CTO at SalesTrip. Lorenzo Frattini, who is just amazing. He did CTO, he actually after Tequila, but he was CTO at Make Positive, and now he started his own company, Clayton. Nick Ticini's now started his own company called Native Video. We've got Nick Eels and Bash, who are over at Forza. There's like heaps of sort of people starting their own businesses or just being very successful and consulting in sort of other consulting businesses, or even many being very, very successful at Accenture still as well.
So what kind of exposure to scale of projects were you getting then? Because obviously they were acquired by Accenture, but were they like the company that everyone wanted to work with just because of the quality of people they had?
I don't think so. Well, not at the time. It didn't feel like that. But, you know, there were some key projects, I think, from my point of view. Like, we were never really doing, like, mum and pop type projects. Like, we were doing good project, like, mid-markety type projects when we joined. But, you know, the scale as we grew, like, was considerable. Like, I distinctly remember a conversation with the then CEO, Paul Andrew, when we were pitching for some work at Burberry. And it was looking like we were going to be selected, and it was a real inflection point for me anyway, because it kind of showed how far we'd come. But I remember this conversation. I was like, I didn't really think we would be able to be getting these types of projects, because like a year ago, like this was probably like 10 times the sort of size of the project we were doing, you know, a year before, for example. And then after that project, that gave us quite a lot of experience to go into larger and larger projects. So following that, I was involved in high-profile projects like British Airways and Virgin Atlantic as well.
Yeah, well, so who set the bar with becoming a CTA there, and kind of who was the trailblazer in that sense that then so many other people have now kind of followed and kind of caught up with?
Yeah, so at Tequila, we had Wes Nolte and Cameron Cronin that they were the first to go through the process as guinea pigs. And they worked through this process with some of the Salesforce, with a team in Salesforce, kind of coaching them on what the board was all about. Like, this was a time where Salesforce really needed architects or certified architects within Europe, and they wanted to help us kind of coach this first crop of people through the process. So Wes and Cam went through that process and eventually did the board and was eventually successful doing the board. And I wanted to be next because I thought I had the experience to do it. Wes and Cam's experience helped me massively. And Wes put heaps of time into pulling this all together into an academy internally within Tequila, this architect academy, which was insanely valuable. And a lot of that has actually transferred into some of the work that Sebastian Wagner's now doing at Flow Republic, actually. And so I did my CTA board exam at the same time as Seb. We studied together around that. But we also had some help from Mark Kane, I remember, I think he'd done it just before Wes and Cam. And he sort of came in and talked to us a lot about a methodology for it. Like, what do you want to be describing? What do you want to be communicating? What's the marking scheme, which is incredibly important to make sure you're studying and strong in the right areas. So I was given a lot of resources and plenty of time, which was important because it was important to Tequila to show that we had like people of this caliber, and the certification was a proxy for that, basically.
Sure. So how long into your Salesforce career did you go for the CTA? And at that point, when you started preparing, where were your gaps? Like, what hadn't you done, and where were you kind of coming up short in the early kind of prep?
That's a really good question, actually. I can't actually remember when I did it. I think it must have been around 2012. No, sorry. Summer of 2014. I just had to look it up on LinkedIn. So July 2014 was when I did the board exam. I would have, my first experience with Salesforce at Dell would have been around 2008 or 2009, so quite a few years in, but also quite a breadth of experience of that period. So I kind of worked in a very large organization at Dell, worked in a medium size, like IG was about 1,000-2,000 people, so quite a lot, like a good sized organization there, rolling out as an admin, having ownership of Salesforce and deploying multiple different projects. And then at Tequila, running more of the different size projects as well. So I felt like I had a good understanding of like various different projects, various different technologies on Salesforce, from sales to service cloud. So Burberry was service cloud. I'd done a number of things with sales cloud at IG, at Dell, at Tequila, and other projects at Tequila. And also a lot around portals, which became communities at IG as well. And a lot around sharing and things like that at IG2, which is quite complex. So, you know, I felt like I had a good breadth of knowledge. And I kind of just thought, I should do this. Like, this, it just felt like it's something that I wanted to do. And it's definitely something that Tequila wants me to do.
Can you, I know this is going back some time, but because it's such an achievement, and, you know, even at that point, you know, where you were putting the pressure on yourself, I feel I'm ready, a couple of other people have got it. It must have been pretty stressful going through that process. Can you remember when you found out that you passed and what that was like?
Yeah, I did. I was actually in the middle of a workshop at British Airways at the time. I remember distinctly because I knew they were coming out around this week, I think. And I got a call and I could see it was from Seb. I was pretty sure that he was going to be telling me. So in the middle of the workshop, I was like, sorry, but I've really got to get this. Because I'm pretty sure it's the results. Because the people that had, you know, people I was working with had known I'd gone through the process. It was quite a long project. And they were like, I got someone to cover for me. And it was, yeah, it was, I'd say it was a relief more than anything. It's like just knowing, like having to go through the process again would have been quite heavy. Like I talked about like the time and resources. Like Tequila gave me enormous time and resources to study for it, which is great, but it does also bring its own pressure, doesn't it? But they were great at giving. I think I had at least like a week or two just off projects, off billable projects, to running up to it to just really focus and cram in the last couple of weeks. Which, you know, at the time, I don't think I appreciate how expensive that is. But no, that isn't a big cost and difficult to actually, you know, resource around. So that was a I was really lucky though.
So did anything change, like, in the way that you carried yourself or the way that you were seen, or just like from the moment you got that, what was different for you?
Definitely confidence. Like, so I guess for me, what I felt different was my confidence, because it's really strong validation. And it also externally, it helped with sort of profile, like going into even projects at Tequila, it was kind of clear that I was able to walk in with a bit more weight to a recommendation suddenly coming from me, although it doesn't mean the customers ever took that recommendation. But it definitely gave a bit more weight, and at least maybe like people would listen a bit longer, perhaps, whether they'd agree or not with what I was saying.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce Architect Academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
So looking back, you said obviously you took pay cuts because you knew they were better opportunities. Do you feel that every role that you played and you had along the way played a significant part in you becoming a CTA?
Yeah, definitely. I talked to, like I mentioned earlier, around the breadth of experience, and what I kind of meant from that is kind of working at a customer and then a partner and then going through the process. I think working on a customer side, like you learn a lot. You learn a wide variety of work in consulting, but you don't go deep and you don't own the decisions that you're making. So you don't like live with the consequences of them.
That's sure.
In consulting, you quite easily go in, propose something, deliver it, and you're out within 6 months, not really owning the decision of that a year in, 2 years in. I was at Dell for about 2.5 years. So you do kind of get this, you know, you live with the decisions you make. If you put something in there that causes a problem that you then have to manage, or the way you design a solution, if that's difficult to manage, you're the person managing it. So it's kind of up to you and your team, and it's like it becomes a burden on your team. So you're kind of acutely aware around how to use features of the platform effectively, like groups and queues and roles and territories and things like that, because, you know, well, I can't have, like, if I'm going to have like hundreds of roles, that's insane. I'm not going to manage that. Whereas someone in consulting might not quite understand the actual ongoing impact of their decisions on a team of admins, because sure. They've never actually had to have that ownership of an org or of Salesforce within a business. So I thought that was particularly valuable for me to have that experience there. And then coupled with then the, like, taking that experience and like exploding it across lots of projects at Tequila to kind of give me that expanded knowledge.
So here's an interesting question. When you went into consulting and you'd lived through being the owner of a product and understanding the implications of delivering something that wasn't right, did that make you a better consultant, or did that go out of the window when you become a consultant and you times of the essence? And
no, I think a lot of that was being accounted for, and that was a lot of what the decisions were all about. I think it made me more sympathetic, or like empathetic for the people that had to manage it ongoing. I think the difficulty with consulting is that you have to sometimes, to make something more manageable ongoing, it takes a bit more work up front. It's not just us having to do to make it. We have to convince the company that we need to spend a bit more time on something to make sure that they can manage it, because they might not recognize it themselves. Often being new, like quite often these companies are quite new to Salesforce, or the product owner on the customer side might be new to the technology as well. So it's kind of making sure they understand why we're doing things the way we're doing them, because, you know, we're trying to make this easier for you in the long run, I guess is the idea. The bit of the piece that I didn't like about consulting is not the design, the manageability of it, I guess the how you're going to manage the solution, but, you know, just going and doing iteration two of something, you very rarely actually get to do that iteration two. And that's why I'm talking about product.
Yeah, that brings us on nicely to the product and the product side of your business. So for anyone listening or viewing that isn't across what you do now, can you give us an overview of the business ventures that you've moved into since Tequila?
Yeah, so whilst at Tequila, going back to the CTA, one of the things that CTA allowed me to do was kind of bargain more in my role. So while every time I got a promotion at Tequila, I would got a pay rise at Tequila, I'd also take a day off. So I went from a 5-day week to a 4-day week to a 3-day week. And I always get, like, every time I got a pay rise, I'd take a day off. So my salary would stay the same, I'd just work less. And then those 1 or 2 days a week, I started building up my own side projects, and which turned into products. So I started with some little tools just to kind of experiment. And then I eventually started building a product that would become TaskFeed, which actually started as like a agile scrum project management tool, until I kind of realized, actually I got some advice from someone around, you know, why people are buying add-ons to Salesforce, and it's to kind of extend their sales or service process. And that's not what I was doing. So I kind of stripped it right back and kind of focused on, well, what are use cases around project management, task management, around the sales and services world? And that's kind of where I focused on some of, and that's kind of where TaskFeed came from. And then I was running TaskFeed for about 4 or 5 years. And then last year we brought TaskFeed together with Recursive. So now we've got what I think is one of the best suites of project management, resource management, and professional services automation products running completely native to Salesforce Lightning. And it's a really compelling solution for consulting businesses. So I've got my experience from Tequila and consulting businesses, where we churned through both Financial Force and Kimball. I had some success with both of them, had also a few headaches with both of them, so I'm kind of bringing that experience to Precursive. But also an industry we work a lot with is high-tech businesses, so like SaaS and technology businesses, who are delivering professional services alongside an implementation of their product, or a telco business delivering implementations of their services and their products. So that's where Precursive is helping businesses today, and it's great to have this kind of suite of products that we're able to focus on and deliver around.
So had you always wanted to like from the moment of from going into the Salesforce world and seeing the opportunity, like, did something trigger and think, you know, one day I'm going to have a business, one day I'm going to build a product?
I got quite into it when I was at Tequila. I could see the AppExchange taking off, and I just thought I could do that. like that. They are just Apex Code and Salesforce. I know how to do that. I can do that. So I thought, how hard can that be? I kind of gave it a shot. And it was a little harder than I thought it was, and it took a lot longer than I thought it would. But I'm 100%. I'd never change that decision. It was definitely right for me.
Yeah, sure. And so obviously you saw an opportunity because you used other products that didn't necessarily fit the use case perfectly, or you came into some challenges with them. And then you started building out this idea, and then you had to strip it all back. Like, it sounds pretty stressful. Like, how has that journey been from, like, shaping a product, having to iterate and come up with new ideas and develop new things on the fly? Like, how is the life of a product owner in those early days?
I loved it. Like, and I still do. It's great. You get to, something I didn't like about consulting is I have a great idea and I had to sell everyone on it. I had to sell the customer on it. I had to sell the team on it. I had to get budget for it. In the early days, the budget was just, you know, and still now it's really just prioritizing. Like, what's the most important? That's always the hardest thing. And it's still my biggest flaw, is kind of saying yes to way too much. Realizing that everything you say yes to, you're saying no to a lot of other things, because everything just gets pushed back. You don't really recognize that until you've done it, and that's pretty difficult. But in terms of, like, the stress of the decisions, there wasn't too much anxiety around that. I always have, and I still do have, this kind of clear idea of what I want the products to look like and work together. My biggest thing I'm working on now is, how do I articulate that and communicate it more? Because it's not just kind of me and a small team doing it. Now we're a larger organization. We need to communicate that objective better. So that's something I'm working on.
And you negotiated the perfect environment where you've got a salary coming in on the side, and you're able to build something alongside that. Mm-hmm. Is that something you would always recommend to someone? Everyone's situation is different, right? But if they can be in that situation where they've got an income and an idea, is that the kind of best place to be?
For me, it worked great. Again, it took the stress out of it, really. It was just me toying around for a few months until I kind of cracked the idea and then spent a while iterating on that. You know, I was in a really lucky position where I was able to do that. But yeah, so the reason I did, like, I kind of follow like startup Twitter and whatever, like things that are going on, or like, you know, the startup scene. And something that always blew my mind was that, especially in the US, people would talk about these, they'd start a company and they always use this term like a friends and family round. I don't, the idea of me like going around friends and family to get like £10,000 off people is like, that's, you know, I don't know who their friends and family are, but that's not my friends and family. and also the idea that you would put your friend's money into a venture that was quite high risk at that point. It seems, you know, I get there's a lot of upside for those people they put their money in, but there's also a lot of downside. It feels like, I kind of feel that whole thing of friends and family rounds is quite irresponsible, because you're playing on people's relationship with you and they want to help you and you're basically burning their money through and all sorts of things. So I use my salary to kind of, it didn't, you know, building a product on Salesforce costs you zero. You start to incur costs when you're selling it through the rev share. But, you know, if you're a developer, if you know how to build solutions on Salesforce, you can just do it yourself for free. It's just your time. So, you know, I got a salary, took a day off. I was being paid my time, basically. That's how it worked. So I wish I'd somehow accrued that time as debt to the company. That's something I should have done, just for an accounting purpose. So as the company grew, I could kind of pay myself back tax-free a bit more. I should have done that. That's a recommendation. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's that was hugely lucky for me. Like I at the same time I was getting married, I was having some kids at the point as well. So I wasn't in a position to just kind of sack off work and move to the mountains and work on some product. I had to do it in these 1 or 2 days a week, and also evenings and weekends and whenever. It took a bit longer, I guess. I guess I could have gone and scrounged some money from people and started building something out. But I don't know who I'd have gone to. I don't think anyone would have trusted me with their money. And I think I would have probably just built the wrong thing faster. I think there's something to say for spending time on it and getting it wrong and then iterating on it.
There's this quote, I don't know the exact quote, but it's something like, if you're not embarrassed by your first product, you waited too long, or something like that.
Yep.
Is that true?
Yeah, I actually use that to say, you know, if you're not embarrassed around what your product looked like a year ago, then you're not doing enough. You're not improving your product fast enough. So I look back on all of our products, and I'd say a year ago they've improved massively, and the year before that massively again. So yeah, I definitely agree. I'm sure I could dig out some early screenshots of Tarsfeed that I was sharing on Twitter and things like that when I was first building it back in whenever it was, 2014, 15, 2016, and you know, it's nothing compared to what it is today. So it's also something is, don't measure your first version against like the market leader's current version. Like, that's just not a fair comparison. So start with something, iterate on it, and customers will tell you what they want.
So a product doesn't sell itself, right? And you're an IT guy, you're a techie, you're doing 2 days a week building this product. How have you gone from that to where you are now? And how has your role changed along that time?
Yeah, that's a good point. This is what everyone told me. Like Mark Wakelin, who was the CEO at Tequila when I was doing my CTA and actually moving and starting Tarsfeed, he was incredibly supportive. He's fairly entrepreneurial himself, so he gave me lots of latitude to do it. Signed off on me like reducing my time, so I'm always thankful to him for giving me that. But yeah, he always said it's like building the product's not the hard thing. You've got to then kind of sell it. And I was like, no, come on, you build something and people buy it, right? But yeah, it's very true. If it not necessarily the sales, but also marketing and how you're like, what is your proposition? Why would people buy from you? Why would they trust you? Why are they giving you money? You know, these are all things I had to figure out. And through the years building out Tarsfeed, we hit our heads against that. We tried different things, but we came up with this, you know, where we struck upon this concept of ICP, this ideal customer profile. That was really helpful to us for kind of unlocking who are the most who are the customers that get the most value out of our product, and of which of those customers are most valuable to us. And you know, through that, you find there's mutual value that they get from the product and you get from them. Hopefully, there's some balance between like your highest paying customers or your, you know, where there's a big segment of customers that you can really just focus on and make. And you know, as soon as you kind of define who they are and their value proposition, then suddenly it really helps. Like marketing message becomes easier. The sales cadence and messaging becomes a lot easier. Support becomes easier because more people are using the product in the same way. And product development becomes easier because everyone's asking for the same thing because they've got the same problem and they're trying to solve it in a similar way. So this idea of coming down to this ideal customer profile and kind of building for a need rather than building a fairly generic product that people kind of self-identify and a need and how it solves that problem. But that was a big change in terms of how we thought about the business and the product at TaskFeed, and we're doing that same process right now across Procursive as well.
Yeah, nice. So your role, I'm guessing, or maybe you are still doing some dev, but you've obviously got a lot on your plate managing a business with a lot more staff now. What does your role look like now?
So when we brought TaskFeed and Procursive together, sort of Jonathan Corey was the CEO at Procursive. He stayed on as the CEO at Procursive, and I took on the role of CTO. So, you know, in actual fact, that means I'm responsible for product development, services, and support. But I guess me and Jonathan work quite closely across like the entire business. So I'm still kind of annoying people in marketing and chipping in and things in sales and trying to figure out like the operations of the business as well. Quite a lot. So, and these are all things that I enjoy and get quite excited about. So I'm keen to stay close to those. I'm still way too close to TaskFeed as a product. So this is like my own flaw. So we now, it's recently been rebranded as Procursive Onboarding Experience or Procursive ABX. And I'm really close to it with the product team and the developers just because it's my baby. But I'm super happy with the team that we've got now in place. And we are in a position where I could be more hands-off if I just kind of relinquish that control.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, we've got these kind of three core products: Procursive Onboarding Experience, Procursive Resource Capacity Optimization, RCO, and Procursive Professional Services Experience for PSA. And we're bringing more to market around things like billing this year. So I'm very focused on the products, the cohesion, and how these products are working together, and then how we work with sales, marketing, customer success to make sure we're prioritizing the right direction, trying to do a better job of, you know, defining how, like some messaging around those products and things like that as well.
So when you're hiring for your team, and did, like I'm guessing you would have been in a senior role at Tequila, so you'd have had some day-to-day hiring responsibilities there as well. But is it now a completely different level of expectation? Because like you said, it is your baby. Like these people are going to be working on a product that you've built from the ground up. Do you have, is the bar super high and higher than it's ever been before when you buy it?
I guess it's different. At Tequila, I was hiring developers and architects, and there was a couple of great examples. Like we were just trying to hire people. Like we were always trying to hire. We're always growing, getting more projects. So we're always behind. We always had in a consulting business, you've got this balance of how many contractors you've got in your books versus employees. You're always trying to balance that appropriately. And there were times where I'd have an interview with someone. There was this guy, there was a couple of people. I don't know if I've interviewed Seb or not, but there was this guy, Mark, who I spoke to on Skype. I think he was in Russia or Germany at the time. I forget where he was actually working at the time. And, you know, within 5 minutes, I was like, this guy's great. We just need to, like, let's just hire him. So I was like, like, let's just do it. And there's also somebody like, I like you. I just not, like, we need to figure out what your role is here, because, like, you've obviously got a lot to bring. So that's like a different experience. We were just kind of, we needed people and they'd settle in somewhere. There was enough projects going on that they'd settle in somewhere. At Procursive, we're growing fast a bit, like not like in consulting where you need people to deliver projects. It's a bit of a different like switch. We still need people, of course, and they're incredibly important, but it's it's not quite the same games and consulting. I guess something that I'm looking at around quite a lot now is how someone owns their area or their decision, right? So there's a difference between someone who's just doing their job and someone who's owning their area and owning their decision. So we brought on Debbie earlier this year into our services to run, actually into our services team. She's now running it, like, because she just stepped up and she was amazing to a point where it's an area that I'm responsible for, but I, you know, she's running that. She's great at that. And it's bringing on people like Debbie into these roles that where they own it. They make decisions. They live with those decisions. If they're wrong, they figure it out. They might come and ask for some direction and support, but they own it. It's their thing. She owns services and support. So that's something that I'm quite keen on now.
Yeah, like getting out of their way. If they're the right person, they'll work it out, right?
Yeah, like there's, you know, I might have some ideas, but quite often, like, it's just let them do their thing. And it's a hard thing for me to do. I'm a bit of a control freak, so it's something that I need to work on myself. To say that, let's just get out of people's way. When you get the right people, then you can. It's a real, there's a real difference. It allows you to do so much more.
So one thing I'm really interested in, because you've got Salesforce people in your team, you've got a mixture of skill sets and people that have come through the Salesforce path. Are they always looking over their shoulder at decisions they're making, being like, is the CTA looking, and am I doing the right thing here? Do you feel that title is a blessing or a burden at times with having other people in the team that need to make architectural decisions?
I hope not. I do try and defer to the team to make their own decisions as much as possible. Again, sometimes I'm just too obnoxious to let them kind of get involved too much, more than I should. In a lot of places I'm kind of learning from everyone else. I've done my certification in 2014, the platform's come a long way. So there's people on the team that are a lot more experienced in parts of the platform than I am. I guess one of the things I try to do is try and put some guidance around what, it's more the decisions that aren't right or wrong, right? It's things like, it's something that comes up in Salesforce quite a lot. So an example of this might be that there's a Salesforce platform limitation which impacts like user experience somehow. So it means that some aspect of the UI might not behave in the way that we might like for our product. Now we've got a couple of decisions to make there. We either accept it and go with the standard way that Salesforce either been designed for better or worse, or we kind of change our scope a little bit and kind of try and own that area a bit more and build something custom that kind of works the way that we intended it to work in the first place. And that's not a right or wrong decision. Like there's good things and bad things about both. So something I'm trying to focus on a lot more is working with the team around defining, well, what are our principles for our products when that type of thing comes up? What are we thinking about to get to the bottom of what decision we would do? So more of a framework for how we make decisions on the product in that way.
Yeah. No.
But that's very difficult, but we can think about things like, how much do we want our products to work out of the box and use standard platform capability as much as possible? How much do we want them to have a great user experience? Sometimes those things work directly in line with one another. Sometimes they're out of whack and you need to kind of make a decision, not one side or another, but along this path somewhere. And it might not land at the extremes, but you might, maybe you can land in between.
Yeah, nice trade-off. So the final question, forward-looking, what's keeping you excited and engaged with the product and the business?
Yeah, so we're in the middle of a summer release. We're bringing updates out across our three core products. And this is the first release that TaskFeed is being rebranded as Recursive Onboarding Experience, Recursive OBX. And that this is we brought the companies together end of last year. So we've been working for 7 months on how these products work together. And I think we've cracked it with this release. TaskFeed is all about like project collaboration and how you work on tasks and build project plans out of templates together. Recursive is always about resource management, who's got capacity, who's got utilization, what are people's costs, what's the margin of the project. With this release, we've kind of brought those together. So you can now use a template within what is Recursive OBX to build a project plan. And then you assign different roles to those tasks, or you assign individuals to those tasks, and it automatically builds a resource plan for you so that you can see within Recursive, and it automatically calculates things like your cost and your margin for that project based on the roles and the people that you have on that project. So if a project gets pushed by a couple of weeks, it immediately gets reflected in Recursive, in the Recursive plan around sort of resource management, and it immediately updates things like the budget information and the project accounting information within Recursive. So there's some really, insanely valuable things there for our customers that we can take to them. So we're working through with that on a couple of customers right now, and the feedback's been really positive. So that's really exciting, and that's just the first step. We want to do other things like start to integrate them more, have the same. At the moment, they still feel like two different products because they are. So we're slowly bringing those together. There's a roadmap of how we're doing that and how we're bringing new capability to all these different products, and even working on completely new products as well. So there's a lot to do now. We've got more resources now as a larger organization. So yeah, I couldn't be more excited for the next 12, 18 months. It's going to be great.
Yeah, exciting times. And you've mentioned Twitter a couple of times. Is that the place people can find you if anyone wants to hit you up and ask you a couple of questions? Or
yeah, is there another? I'm happy to be there. It's kind of where I waste a lot of my time. So at Andy Mahood on Twitter, I spend a bit of time there. You can also catch my new podcast, App Etc., which I should be sharing more on Twitter. Actually, I tend to share quite a lot on LinkedIn around App Etc. So App Etc. is all around having conversations a bit like this with different founders and technical leaders in product businesses around Salesforce and Salesforce App Exchange. So I've been speaking to some of the people I've spoken about already, like Lorenzo at Clayton. I've had conversations with Lorenzo about starting his own business and running his business. I've had conversations with Seb Wagner about Flow Republic that's coming out. And there's and also Wes Nolte around being a technology leader at SalesTrip.
Yeah, nice. Well, we'll make sure we share the handles as well. And thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat and looking forward to seeing what the future has in store.
Thanks very much. It's been really enjoyable.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.